to see you all here. Before we begin, I've been asked, for reasons that are not immediately clear to me, to mention that there is the possibility that there's a case of mumps on grounds. So, like, wash your hands and don't touch people who are sick. Right? This should not be news to anybody, but I've been asked to announce it anyway, so hurrah, I announced it. Any comments, questions, concerns, or other things for me? Okay. Before we get to the details of the topic I want to cover today, had a question based partly on the homework, partly on the lab yesterday. Right, so the first part of the lab was pointing out you should not create scanners inside most methods. Usually that's the wrong thing to do, unless the purpose of the method is to create a scanner. So in this first part of the homework, a scanner comes in. It's passed into the method. So you don't need to create it, okay? Because it's passed in as a parameter. In the other methods, you also don't need to create a scanner because the result of reading the CSV file is passed in as a parameter. Okay? So none of these six methods should be creating scanners. So where does the scanner come from? The scanner will come from whatever main method is calling your code. Okay? So the example main methods we have, they create scanners. They call the read CSV, which creates the input for all the other methods. So that's how you want, as you're testing your code, that's the structure you want to use as well. Don't create scanners inside your methods. But if you write a main method to test things, then that's where you create your scanner. Any questions about that? Okay. So, the first thing I want to do... Oh, sorry, you have a question. Could I briefly explain how color works? The purplify method?
Yeah.
Or the color object? All right, color. Yes, let's talk about color. So I have an object color, okay? Colors in computers are stored with four numbers, okay? Red, green, blue, and alpha. So I can make myself a color by making a new color, and I can pass in to the constructor amount of red, amount of green, amount of blue, and amount of alpha. So, for example, if I wanted a nice, partially transparent magenta, I'd pass in 255 for red, pass in 0 for green, 255 for blue, and if I want it partially transparent, maybe like a 120 for alpha. Okay? What do these numbers mean? They vary between 0 and 255. 0 means... 0 in the red spot would mean emit no red light at all, no red photons. A 255 in the red spot means emit as many red photons as you can. Similarly for blue and green, alpha here, this last piece here, is opacity. So if it's 255, it's completely opaque, hide whatever was underneath. If it's 0, it's completely transparent, just show whatever was already there, ignore the new color. Okay? So we have these four numbers you can use to create colors. So the purpose of the purplify method, if we to look at the purplify method real quickly. Purplify, it takes in a number of votes and a special thing about how opaque it is, and then computes those four numbers based on the logic it uses, right? So if there's a lot of red votes and not many blue or green votes, red will be strong. If there's a relatively even balance, we'll get about the same amount of each of the three colors. And there's a little bit of mapping described here. Do you want me to say anything more about color? Yes, so you would create your color using new. Okay, and then once you've got it set up, you'd return it. Because that's the return type of this method. Other questions related to homework, color, etc.? Yes?
When you say to cast to int, are you saying to cast C to int, or are you saying to change
numbers? No. These numbers here, must be int, and they must be 0 is less than or equal to res less than or equal to 255. Okay? That's true of red, green, blue, and alpha. All four of them have to be ints. They have to be between 0 and 255. So if you figure out that the appropriate amount of red is 37.8, cast it as an int. I don't care if you cast it to 37 or 38. We're not being that picky about colors. But turn it into an int, pass it along. If it turns out to be negative 30, use 0. If it ends up to be 3050, use 255, right? So if it gets too big or too small, clamp it to the allowable range. Yes?
For the homework program that we're making, the homework, does that usually take a while to run, or does it produce an outline?
How long does it take to draw a map? The code that I wrote can draw a map of the entire U.S. in about half a second. There are certainly slower ways to do it. Okay? So if we think about various pieces, most of these methods will be pretty fast, right? For example, to read CSV, I run through the CSV file once. Yes, they're big CSV files, but computers are really good at doing things fast. Purplify will be really fast. Max votes per square kilometer will take a reasonable fraction of a second. Okay? So the main place that you could do something too slow actually happens in your purple map. Okay, one of the things you need to use in your purple map, somewhere here, is the max votes per square kilometer. You will have a loop. You'll be using max votes per square kilometer somewhere. If you compute max votes per square kilometer inside your loop, it will run slowly. But I'm not testing for speed, so I don't think you should have to worry about the speed. If you don't mind it being slow, great. Make it slow. We'll talk in 3-4 weeks, we'll talk about speed and how you think about speed more appropriately. Yes?
Will this homework be similar to other ones where if we have it finished before the deadline, we can submit it and get feedback?
Yep, feedback's enabled. I have received feedback on the homework. So at least 3 people, so I know it works for people other than me. Yep. It will give feedback about each method. It gives limited feedback about the last one, but you should be able to test the last one because it either makes a picture or it doesn't. But the first 5, it should give you... It won't give you great detail, but it'll tell you it works, it doesn't work, roughly. And might give you a hint as to why it doesn't if it doesn't. Yes?
Do you have more than the methods that are listed in the homework prompts? Will that break?
If you have extra methods, do I care? No. If you're missing a method, I do care. But if you have more, don't care. Other questions? All right. So we're going to continue our exploration of classes today. And to do that, I want to pause briefly and go back and look at this. We will talk some more about this in days to come. Okay? But this is something that often confuses people when they're dealing with classes. So let's talk about this, where it comes from, and what it means. So let's suppose I have a method, public void, how about eat? Let's say we eat an int of donuts. Okay, and we have some method. And we're making some type of thing eat donuts. What do we think eats donuts? How about public class human? Humans eat donuts, I think. Okay. So we've got some class. It's eating donuts. Okay. And we're also going to have some field in our class. So let's say that every human has, how about, an int weight. Okay, so humans weigh something, they can eat donuts. And what happens when they eat donuts? This human's weight increases. If I could spell correctly, we'll pretend I spelled correctly because I don't feel like changing it. All right. Here is a very simple model of humans. Humans weigh some amount. They eat donuts. The more donuts they eat, the more they weigh. The end. That's humans. Everything you need to know about them. Okay? But this example lets us talk about this. And that's my goal here with this method. So, any questions about the method before we explore what this means? Yes? Yes, what part of it do you want me to repeat? Oh, sorry, I will speak more slowly. We have a class called human. We are modeling our humans one method in one field. Okay? The method is called eat. Eat has one parameter, an integer number of donuts. So you can eat one donut, you can eat 50 donuts, that's all you can do though as a human. We also have a field, which is our weight as an integer. And what does the method do? It increases this as weight by the number of donuts eaten. Okay? A toy method for exploring this. Did you have questions about any piece of that? Yes?
Can you explain again what bad things happen if you don't use this?
I will get to what bad things happen when you don't use this on Monday.
Would it be detrimental if you didn't use this?
If we did not have this in this particular program, it would do exactly the same thing. But it would be hiding something that's going on, might cause us to get the wrong mental model of the code. So we're going to put this in here for the educational purposes today. On Monday, we'll talk about the beneficial purposes in other situations. Yes?
Does weight have to be made private, or does it have to be?
Should weight be private? Yes, it should. We'll talk more about private today. Does it need to be? No, it does not. Okay. We can leave off the private and Java will compile. It will allow us to do dangerous things. We'll talk about that in the second half of lecture. Yes?
Can you just go over this.wait?
That is the purpose of this. So yes, let's talk about this.wait. Okay, so I have this method, I have this class. It's sitting there minding its own business being a class. Somewhere else I'm going to assume I've got a main method. Okay. I'm not going to write all of it because I just want it for illustration purposes. Somewhere a main method exists. In the main method, we make a human. We will call our human H because we're very creative people. Okay? So I make a human in my main method, and then I say H.eat 3 donuts. I'll tell H to eat again. So, I have in my code a main method that creates a human using the human class I just wrote, invokes the eat method on it twice. What I'm going to do now is sort of draw a picture of what this looks like. We'll talk about some more pictures on Monday, but it's good to have a mental model of what happens. So, anytime we're dealing with code here, the first thing that happens is that main gets some memory. The method that starts running is always main. The method that starts running always has memory. It's going to have args because all main methods have args. We don't really care what it's talking about. Okay? So we have a main method. Main is starting to run. Main has memory. And the first thing that we do in our main method is we make a box called H for holding humans. Okay? We make a box called H that can hold humans. Right here on the line human H. And the other part of that line is new human. So H will go pointing off to a newly constructed human. Java doesn't know what humans look like. It makes them look like boxes. And in this box describing my new human, I'm going to have space for all of the fields of the human class. The human class has just one field, weight. Okay? So inside my human, I will have one box called weight. And Java initializes things in boxes with zero, false, or null, so it gets zero. So when I've run the first line of main, human H equals new human, this is what memory looks like. I have a main method, has two variables, args pointing off to something, who cares what, H pointing off to a newly constructed human that weighs nothing. When I run the next line of code, I'm invoking a new method. I'm invoking human's eat method. So a new activation record, a new spell out of memory is going to be stacked on top of main. I don't actually want to stack it, so I'll just draw it down below. Okay. So eat is going to pop into existence. It's going to be stacked on top of main, so we can't see main, but we're not going to deal with that yet. And when eat pops into existence, it is also going to initially be set up with some stuff. It's going to initially have a number of donuts. So we're going to have donuts. Okay. And that donuts is a parameter, so it's going to get its value from the invocation. So we invoked eat with 3, so that 3 will be passed into the donuts variable, so donuts here will be 3. In addition to that, non-static methods magically get something called this. And this gets its value from where it was on the left side of the period. So on the left side of the period where I invoked the method, there was an H. So I get the same thing that was in variable H gets put into this, which is talking about that same human. So before I've run any part of the code, this is how any part of the eat code, this is what memory looks like. I set up in order to run eat. Any questions to this point? Yes? Yes. This magically appears in any non-static method. It's automatically part of Java, built in. All non-static methods have this. Magic. It's not really magic, right? We could look at what the underlying machine code looks like, but we don't need to. All non-static methods have this.
As long as we call it this and not something else, we're good to go.
Yes, it's always there. It's always named this. You can't change it. It's always there. So I'm not allowed to call it anything other than this. I can't call it self, I can't call it me, it has to be this. Yes?
In order for it to get the rate this, do the classes have to be in the same project?
Do the classes have to be in the same project? In order to compile, Eclipse requires them to be in the same project. This is a characteristic of Eclipse, not of Java. Okay, so it's sort of like when there's weird things about using Microsoft Word that don't apply to English in general. This is, projects are one of those things that apply to Eclipse, but do not apply to Java in general.
So if you had just the human class, and you typed in this, what do they do?
If I have just the human class, and I type in this, it depends on where I type it. Okay, so I can only use this inside non-static methods. Non-static methods are methods that are describing behaviors of objects. Objects are the ones that have access to this. So anywhere inside any non-static method, this exists. Inside a static method like main, it does not. And that's sort of independent of what class I'm working with. There's always a this if it's non-static. I don't know if I really answered your question, because I'm not sure I know what your question was. Okay. Other questions? So this automatically appears, and where does it get its value? It gets its value from thing on the left side of the period. Just like the parameters get their value from things in the parentheses, this gets its value from the left side of the period. So we get set up like this. We run the eat method. What does eat do? It increases weight by the number of donuts. So the weight will turn into 3. Okay, because that's what we have. This is weight increases by donuts. So this is weight increased by the number of donuts. After we run the method is finished, the activation record goes away, and we're back in main. Okay? We're back in main. The next thing main says is invoke eat again. Again with H, but now with a different number as its parameter. So eat will pop back into existence, making me wonder why I erased it. Because eat is non-static, it will have this. It will also have donuts. Okay. So this time donuts is 4, because the second time I invoked it, the H was still the same, but the number, the argument was a 4. And so eat will do whatever it does, which is, of course, replace the 3 with 4. And it will return, and away we go. Sorry, not replace the 3 with 4, replace the 3 with 7. I can't add, it turns out. Okay, so after we've run this method, there will be a human in existence that weighs 7. Any questions about this example? Okay. So I just wanted to get that. We'll do some more pictures, talk about more complicated scenarios on Monday. after we talked about what we're going to talk about for the rest of today. So we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to go back to some UML class diagrams. Okay, so we're going to make a UML class diagram, which, remember, was the three boxes: class name, fields, methods. We're going to make one for a fraction class. Okay? So let's make ourselves fraction. To represent mathematical fractions. So, take just a few seconds, turn to whoever's sitting next to you. What are the appropriate fields and methods for a fraction class? If I want to add fractions to Java, in addition to integers and decimal numbers called doubles, what should I store inside my fractions? Turn to whoever's next to you, come up with at least one or two fields, at least one or two methods. I will then call on people at random to figure out what you got. Should be in fraction. Anyone? Yes. Numerator. What type should numerator have? Int. Yes. It turns out that all numerators of fractions are integers. Hooray! What else? Next one's easy. Yes.
Denominator.
Hooray! Denominator. Oh, this is so hard. Of course, there was a time when we all would have been very confused by this back in elementary school. But anyway. Any other fields we need in our fractions? Anything else that distinguishes one fraction from another? Okay, we're going to say that's the whole set of fields. Methods. There's more creativity available here. Yes?
Simplify.
Okay, so I might have a simplify method. Does simplify need any parameters? Do I need to tell a fraction anything else when I ask it to be simplified? I don't think so. I think we could just simplify the fraction. And what kind of thing gets returned from simplify? So there's two ways we could go. Okay? One way is we could say it's void. It changes this fraction. This fraction used to be 4/6. Now it's 2/3. The other way is it could return us a new fraction. This is still 4/6, and I also have 2/3. I want it to return a new fraction. I want it to change itself. I don't understand what you're talking about. All right, we're evenly split between the three options, so I'll just say void. We'll come and talk about fraction. We'll actually write some code today, talk about how it works. Another method. Anyone? Yes? Convert to decimal. Okay. So we could have, what do you want to call it? Let's call that 2double. And it will return a double. Okay? Let's take one more. What's one more thing we can do with fractions? Yes?
Reciprocal.
Reciprocal. Okay, reciprocal. I will say this returns a fraction. Great. We could add more. We will add more. But this gives us something to work with. Gives us a place to start. I have this diagram of what I'm going to call a fraction in my code. All right. So now what I'm going to do is wish that they gave me bigger tables. All right. So we are now going to write a fraction class. We're going to turn that UML we just had into code. Okay? So the first thing I need to do is make a new class, and I should probably call it fraction, because that's what I said I'm going to call my class. I should not have had it auto-generate main. Oh, well. All right. So in our UML diagram, we said there were two fields for fraction. We had int numerator and we had int denominator. Okay. And in addition to those, we decided there would be three methods, which were public, void, I should have kept that up. Where were they? Simplify, double, and reciprocal. Simplify, two double, and reciprocal. Simplify. Simplify. Okay, we'll put in something there later. Public, double, two double. We'll put in something there later. And public, fraction, reciprocal. All right. Three methods for fractions. Hopefully most of these won't be that hard. To simplify, simplify is a bit of a mess. Meh, we'll come back to simplify. To double, all I need to do is actually do the division, right? Numerator divided by denominator. Will that work? Why not?
It's not a double.
It's not a double, all right. There. It's ugly looking, but it's a legal way of doing this. Cast the denominator to double before I do my division. Now I've returned a double version of my fraction. Okay? And reciprocal. Reciprocal of a fraction is just the numerator and denominator switch, right? So I need to return a new fraction that has the denominator as the numerator and the numerator as the denominator. And I'll put in all my thises to be polite. Remember, anytime you see a blue variable, put a this dot in front of it, it will save you trouble later. Okay. Simplify, simplify. We could do it this way. We could say for divisor equals denominator, divisor is greater than zero. So we're just going to check every possible divisor. There are clever ways to do this. We're just going to try them all. So we're going to start at the denominator and we're just going to work our way down. Okay, and then we're going to say if the denominator modulo the divisor equals zero. Yeah, simplifying fractions is a bit weird. Okay, so if I have a number that's a multiple of the denominator and that number is also a multiple of the numerator. Numerator, then I can divide by the divisor, divide them both by the divisor. Simplifying fractions, it's a bit weird. Not particularly important how it works for this code, but this will simplify them. You're welcome to come up with other techniques if you want. There's actually a very famous algorithm called Euclid's algorithm that we could do here as well, but this will work well enough. So I have some methods. Yes?
The numerators and denominators in the simplify method also need the this dot in front of them?
Yes, thank you. All blue variables should have this dots in front of them, everywhere. Okay? If I leave them off, Java will guess what I meant, but it's better to put this dots in explicitly, it will save us trouble later. Thank you for pointing that out. Other questions? Yes?
You need to make a constructor.
I do need to make a constructor. That's what the red squiggly means. Okay, so let's make a constructor. So remember, all constructors. There's two things that make a constructor look different than another method. The name is the same as the name of the class. There is no return type. Okay, so let's make one that takes two integers. This dot numerator equals n, this dot denominator equals d. Now I can make fractions and I'm good to go. I can make fractions, I can simplify them, turn them into doubles, and get the reciprocal. Everything you ever wanted to do with fractions. Except, of course, any actual math. But we'll get back to that. All right, so now I have a fraction class. Anything else I should talk about or change with my fraction class before we move on to using it? Okay, so then, what I'm now going to do is I'm going to make a different class to test it. Test fraction. Okay? I don't have to make another class. I could actually make a main method in the fraction class, but it's typical to make it separate somewhere else. So I'm going to make myself a fraction. Let's do 2/3. And let's print out the double value of that fraction. Okay. I run this, and I see the double value of 2/3 is a lot of sixes, which it should be. Hooray! My code might work. Let's try some other things. Let's do f dot reciprocal. System dot out dot print one. So let's print out the reciprocal and see what that looks like. And the reciprocal looks like nonsense. We will tell Java how to print out fractions at some point, but for now they don't know how to do that. We'll come back to that. Let's print out the double version, though. Okay. So if I do the double version of the reciprocal, I get 1.5. That looks like it's working. We can worry about simplify, but we don't have any to tell if it's working or not just yet, so we won't do that right now. So I can test it. It looks like it's working. Questions, comments, concerns? Okay, I am now going to break my fraction. I'm going to say f dot denominator equals 0. And I see that now my fraction represents infinity. Okay? Which might kind of make sense, but it isn't really right. It might be negative infinity instead. We don't know, right? So we don't want this. We don't want people to be able to come in and just mess with our denominator. Not a good idea. Hey? So this is why we make fields private, to prevent this kind of behavior. To prevent people from just going in and messing with stuff directly in ways that might break our program. Okay? So, let us adjust fraction to the more common way of doing it. We're going to make the numerator and denominator private. You can no longer touch the numerator and denominator. They are private. Private means can only be accessed from within this class. So a private field in the fraction class can only be touched by methods in the fraction class. Cannot be touched by methods in a different class. Okay? So now when I come back over to fraction, I will see there's a compiler error when I try to do f.denominator, because denominator is private. I can't see it inside this class. It's hidden from me. Okay? Which is okay, but what if I actually want to be able to set the denominators to change my fraction? The other piece that is usually done here, in addition to making fields private, is we make special methods that's purpose is just to change or retrieve the private values. Okay? So, these are typically called getters and setters, and I might make a public int get numerator that just returns this dot numerator. And I might also have a public void set numerator, where this dot numerator equals n. Okay? So I make the field private, and then I make these extra methods for getting and setting things. I'll do the same thing for denominator. Okay. So I made them private. I made getters and setters. Almost all classes in Java have getters and setters to access their fields. This is very common. Now, just doing this means I can come over here and I can change this to set denominator. Instead of using equals, I can use a method to change my denominator. Okay? And this actually won't fix anything just yet. This will still do exactly the same thing it did before. I'm using the setter instead of the equal sign because the setter uses the equal sign. But the other thing I can do here is I could say if d is equal to 0, let's say d equals 1. I'm just going to force the code to do the right thing, to do a safe thing. The definition of the right thing might change. I might want it to blow up. I might want to change it to ignore it. I might want to treat it as if it was 1. Different things I can do. Okay? But the idea is, because I have a setter, now when I try to set the denominator, I don't get nonsense results. I might not get the results I expect, but at least I don't get nonsense. I don't break my code. Questions about getters and setters? Okay. When you're writing classes, as a general rule, you want to make a getter and a setter for every single field that you have, and you want to make them all private. Every once in a while, you'll decide you don't really want to have them all, and so you want to remove some of the getters and setters so that people can't access your variables. But in general, you want them all. They always look very similar. Okay? A getter is return this dot whatever. A setter is this dot whatever equals what you pass in. They always look like this. Every once in a while we tweak it, but the core of a getter and a setter is always the same. It is so always the same that one of the things you can do in Eclipse is you can go to source, generate getters and setters. And it will just poof, auto-generate all of those pieces of code for you. So you don't have to remember how to do it. Okay? So what if you want to, you could just use that. But they're very simple. They're not hard to write. I usually write them by hand, but you're welcome to use the auto-generated ones instead. They will look exactly the same. All right. Getters and setters. The other thing we usually want to do with our getters and setters is use them more places. So it's still possible, it turns out, to mess up my code by making a fraction directly that has a zero denominator. As a matter of fact, let's do even worse. Let's do 0 divided by 0. Okay, I should not print off f. If I print out g, I will see that it says the value of g is nan, which is an abbreviation for not a number. Okay, so I can just make my fraction 0, 0. That's not a number. I broke my fraction class. So typically, in addition to using my getters and setters externally, I will usually use them internally too. Okay? That way, by using the setters inside my constructor, I'm guaranteed that even if somebody does something stupid with my constructor, the one place I have my code to check bad conditions takes care of it. You don't have to use getters and setters in your constructors, but it centralizes where you have to check for bad behavior. You only have to check in the setters. You don't have to worry about also checking in the constructor, and you get the behavior that we probably wanted to come out of this automatically. Any questions about this? All right, since I have now taught you about private getters and setters, before you have been asked to write any classes except last lab, from here on out, you will always make your fields private. You will always make getters and setters to access them. If you fail to do this, bad things might happen to you in the form of grade penalties. Right? So we will do this from here on out. It's good practice. There are a few exceptions that where it's not necessary, but it is so common that we'll just say it's always what we want to do. In the entire Java standard library with tens of thousands of classes, I'm aware of only 4 that have public fields. There may be more I don't know about, but it's very rare to want to have a field that is not private. Okay. Let's talk about one more piece of writing classes. So one of the things we saw earlier is that if I try to print out just G, I get this unpleasant looking thing, which consists of two parts, the name of the class, and where in Java's memory it decided to store it, the address of the fraction. The address will change every time I run it, okay, and is not particularly meaningful or useful to me as I'm trying to understand what's going on. You've probably also seen this when you try to print arrays. Very similar syntax comes out, right, except there's a little square bracket in front of it. So one thing we can do is we can tell Java how to convert our object into a string. Every object can be converted into a string. It's one of several things every object gets for free. Java provides a set of things to all objects. And in 2110, you talk a lot more about how it gets them from those objects and so on. But one of the things it gets from every object is a method called public string to string. Okay? There is this method, public string to string. If I don't give one, Java will use its built-in one for me instead. But I can decide what I want this object to look like as a string. So I can just return, how about I return this dot numerator a slash and this dot denominator. I can pick anything I want as the body of this the toString method, as long as it returns a string. And now when I run this, it shows G as being 0 divided by 1, which is a better representation of 0 than is fraction at FF138451. Right? It's a better model. And so now I can test things like reciprocal, which will break. Reciprocal. And I can actually see what happens when I do my reciprocal. Okay? So reciprocal tries to keep the denominator from being zero, so we get a strange reciprocal in this particular case. But I can test things more easily because I have toString. Should you write a toString for your classes? Only if you want to be able to debug. If you don't care about ever printing them out, who cares? But most people do want to be able to debug, so usually it's a good idea to add a toString. And again, public string toString. Eclipse also has a way of generating a toString. The toString method it generates looks a little bit more complicated. Okay? So you're welcome to use the generate toString. It will add this funky little override thing to say I'm not doing the default thing. You can leave it or remove it, it doesn't matter. Okay, so we can use the generated one if you just quickly want something to pop out. It's not going to look very pretty, but at least it works if you ever want to look and see what your function looks like. But usually it's a good idea to write your own so that it looks reasonable to you. So this dot numerator plus a slash plus this dot denominator is probably a better model of a fraction. Yes?
In your test fraction class, where did you invoke the toString?
Where did I invoke toString? I didn't. Okay? Nowhere in this code does toString appear. So how did it happen? Strings are given special priority in Java. So toString gets called anytime I invoke printer println. It also gets called anytime I were to add something to a string. So I could say, for example, string s equals g plus high. Okay? Implicitly, what's going on here is means g dot to string plus high. Java will add invocations of toString anytime we try to add something to a string, and anytime we try to print. Yes?
If you print something and then want to use that number later in your code, does it now think it's a string?
Nope. Because toString, did toString change anything about my object? Did this change at all in toString? Nope. What happened is I generated a string and handed it back. So the result of invoking toString is a string, but G is unmodified by that. OK? Okay? So the difference between modifying yourself and returning something is important. It's not really new to humans, right? We're used to the idea that most of the time that somebody asks me a question, it doesn't change much about me. I just tell them the answer. That's true of Java as well. Unless I actually go in and change some field, nothing about this object changes. So of all of these methods, the only ones that change anything about this object are simplify and the setters. Right? Setter actually changes this as numerator. But everything else, including toString, does not. So, for example, if I make a new fraction that is, how about 11, 10, 530, okay? Now let's do something. We'll do 530. Okay? I make a fraction. I print it out. Okay? Then I call simplify. And I print it out again. The second printout will look different. Because the simplify will figure out that we can divide by 10. And we'll simplify it. Change the existing fraction. Most methods don't change the existing thing unless they say set. There are, of course, classes where almost everything changes it. In scanner, for example, all of the next methods change the scanner, move it forward. But the hasNext don't. They just tell you what's next. They don't actually change anything about the scanner. So sort of this difference, does a method change the object or not? It's an important thing to understand when you're thinking about objects. It changes how you use them. Other questions? Okay. I'm going to add one more method to my fraction. I'm going to add a public fraction plus. I'm going to add this fraction and that fraction to make a new fraction. Okay. Often when we're making classes, we want them to be able to interact with other objects of the same type or with other classes. So we might also make a plus method that takes an int, for example. What happens? How do we add fractions? Okay. Well, adding fractions, right? Let's do times because it's faster. Okay. One fraction times another fraction. We multiply the numerators, we multiply the denominators. So I can return a new fraction with the new numerator and the new denominator. So new numerator is going to be this is numerator times that's numerator. And then we're going to have this is denominator plus that's denominator. Okay. So now I can start implementing math. I cannot make the times, this asterisk symbol, the multiplication operator in Java, work for fractions. Can't do it. The operators work for primitives. They don't work for objects, with the only exception of the plus operator on strings. Everywhere else, it just doesn't work. Okay? But I can write methods that simulate what would happen, such as times and plus and minus and so on, in order to create a new kind of number that I can use in addition to the ones that are built in. And so I could add more of these if I wanted, but by adding these I now have access to more useful aspects of my code. So for example, I can print h times f, and I can see that I can multiply my numbers together. Where f had a denominator of 1 because I set it. Yep. So we can do our multiplication. We could add more operators there as well. All right. That's about the time I have for today. When we come back on Monday, we will get to look at more some pictures, what's happening under the hood with some classes. Might walk through a little bit more example of using them. And have yourselves a beautiful weekend.